India has never been an aggressor towards anybody. Look at our defense capacity now. Chandrayaan, now the sun.
You know, there's so-called topmost papers, newspapers, news channels, or lobbies.
I think that we are a challenge. A growing and strong India is a challenge to the supremacy of the West.
Hello and welcome. I'm Anupam Kher. In the ever-evolving landscape of the 21st century, the focus now more than ever is on India, Bharat. My guest tonight is a great legacy. He's a serving member of parliament and a second-generation lawyer who has championed many high-profile cases. Welcome, Mahesh Jethmalani.
Pleasure. Pleasure being on your show.
Lovely to see you.
Ram Jethmalani, 1923 to 2019, was a leading Indian criminal lawyer. He migrated to India as a penniless refugee after the 1947 partition of the former British colony into independent countries of India and Pakistan. He left behind a flourishing legal practice in Karachi, Pakistan. He was a BJP member of parliament, but was suspended from the party in 2012 over indiscipline. He fought several high-profile cases in his long and distinguished career. Mahesh Jethmalani, born in 1956, is the son of the late Ram Jethmalani. He joined the ruling BJP in the 1980s when it was a fledgling party. He is a sitting BJP Member of Parliament and an integral part of the party's legal brain trust. He is critical of former Indian Prime Minister Indira Gandhi for the imposition of a state of emergency between 1975 and 1977 when his father escaped to Canada to evade arrest. He has championed many high-profile cases, such as defending then-Gujarat Chief Minister Narendra Modi in the 2002 communal riots, Home Minister Amit Shah in the Zuhrauddin murder incident, bail plea for Bollywood actor Sanjay Dutt.
What made you choose law?
Influence of one's father was so overwhelming. And, you know, he had become such a legendary figure, even in his early days. You know, yes. He fought the emergency,
yes.
Got arrested for it.
Right.
365 top lawyers of the country came to the Bombay High Court to try and prevent that warrant which was issued from Palghat in Kerala, where he had attacked the emergency and Mrs. Gandhi. He was a crusader, and that kind of appealed to me. And of course, I think a little bit of the talent for law was in the genes. Naturally, I gravitated towards it, and then I realized it was really hard work. I mean, law is, 90%, 99% industry and 1% inspiration.
Usually, the sons or the daughters do not match up to their father or their mother. You have really, really taken
it. It works both ways. Either having an illustrious father can retard you or it can incentivize you.
Mm.
So in my case, that I had to catch up. And
yes.
I welcome that challenge.
Yeah, I met Mr. Ram Jethmalani a number of times. Very powerful personality. Energetic, forthright. You are, from that point of view, a little different.
I'm a little more moderate, I would say. A little less outspoken. A little father less was, impulsive. Little
yeah,
less.
Father was a refugee from, he came from Sindh.
Yes. During partition, he was married and he had three daughters.
Mm.
And, he had a very flourishing practice in Karachi.
Mm.
In fact, he was a law partner with Mr. A.K. Brohi, who then went on to become the law minister of Pakistan. Before that, Brohi was the high commissioner in the early 60s, 60-61, for Pakistan in India. He also had a foreign policy and a legal bent of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So my father used to do most of the day-to-day work in court because Brohi had so many, interests and passions. But when partition came and that madness broke out, I think A.K. Brohi told him, Ram, I can't guarantee your safety here anymore.
Mm.
I think Sudeep. So he packed his bag, gave up his practice, home, everything. But he wanted to go back. He thought he'd always go back because he had such a flourishing practice, in Karachi. Lived in a refugee camp in Kalyan with three daughters. But he had 10 rupees in his pocket when he first came. He had no money. My eldest sister, whom I didn't see because I wasn't born at that time. I was born post-partition in the 50s. She had pneumonia. And his situation was that bad financially that he couldn't afford her treatment for pneumonia.
My God.
And she passed away. It was a huge tragedy from the, riches of his career in Pakistan to come to the rags of a refugee camp and then not be able to survive and save his daughter, who was one of his favorite children. I think that made him a little detached. It made him, a little emotionally detached because that kind of tragedy when you're fairly young.
What are your thoughts about refugees in Pakistan, Indian refugees now and coming here and trying to settle down, the Hindu refugees especially? The whole CAA was
designed. I am all for the CAA, Anupam. You know, I have been supporting that legislation. And
yes.
I did an article in it on the front page of the Times of India. And, you know, there is no other home for Hindus, really speaking. I become the president of the World Sindhi Federation, which is a very grandiose sounding name. But we aim to do a lot of work. You know, we're trying to get all the Sindhis with the diaspora, most of whom are extremely well-off and affluent wherever they live. And they've done rather well. So we're trying to get them to help us, Hindu refugees from Sindh. And Sindh is very badly hit, as you know. And their crimes against women are terrible. So a lot of Hindus want to leave only because of that constant fear that, you know, women may be abducted, made to convert, and so on and so forth. So we're now channeling our entire efforts and gathering funds internationally from Sindhi Hindus worldwide to try and prevent these atrocities and rehabilitate them if they come into the country.
How did you get chosen to fight Mr. Modi's case for Gujarat riots?
People close to Prime Minister Modi, at that time Chief Minister Modi, came to me, right? And I was already doing Sadhvi Pragya's case at that time.
Right.
Who was also, according to me, a victim of repression. Trial is still going on, it's sub judice, so I don't want to say too much. But I was convinced of her innocence. And it was Lal Kishan Advani who had actually, both for PM Modi and Sadhvi Pragya, requested me at that time and said that, will you take up their cases? And I said, you know, definitely, because I was always a part of the BJP since 1980. I still hold my parchi, my membership. My father strayed occasionally, but I never strayed from the BJP. I was always, a diehard member of the BJP.
So what makes you a diehard member of BJP?
I believe in the ideology. I believe in the old Jansang ideology. You know, I believe in all the platforms which they have finally executed in this country.
So for our viewers who do not know what is that ideology, how will you sum it up?
Well, the ideology has evolved. Part of it is original. The original ideology, of course, was that they believed in the abolition of Article 370, one main planks. They believed in a uniform civil code. Personally, it's very important to you. Yeah. But to all Indians. You
know, yes, of
course. All very stronger than India.
I was in New York and I was in a cab, in a normal New York cab. And this news came about abrogation of Article 370. There was a Sardarji who was my driver. And he said, Lo ji, kamal ho gaya. So that was a universal reaction of Indians all over the world.
But you know, there were nationalist policies. These were all nationalist policies. And I, frankly, from a very early age, of course, part of it inculcation by my father, he believed in the same thing very strongly. But I could not believe that why anybody would be opposed to Kashmir being an integral part of India, that Article 370 is only a temporary solution.
That,
it has to wither away and give way to a full integration.
Yeah.
I could not believe all that. And then, of course...
Or for that matter, triple talaq.
Triple talaq is, you know, it's emancipation of women. And Prime Minister Modi has announced now, you know, from the ramparts of Red Fort, that Nari Shakti is the mantra of the future.
Right.
It's a national interest. You empower women, you improve your... Not only give them the dignity which they deserve, they've not had all these years, but you also bring them in the mainstream and make them productive assets in life.
From two members in the parliament... to now...
Reservation, 33%.
Yes.
33%.
That's
big step.
And this change in criminal amendment bills, I'm sure you're very happy.
So there are these three bills which have come. All of them have replaced bills which were essentially colonial era legislations. And they were really meant to... they had Victorian principles. For instance, women were given a very subordinate place because, as you know, in England, they were not even given the right to vote till, you know, in the 20th century. So this is the Penal Code is an 1860 Act, right? So there was that aspect. Then, of course, sedition, the word sedition, which has become very controversial in this country, really. The wording was whoever inflames or excites disaffection against the government of the day. That was a provision meant for the British colonial rulers to make sure that their subjects don't excite disaffection against them through speeches and literature. The words government of the day has been replaced by whoever tries to disrupt the sovereignty and integrity of India.
India, that's right. You also said recently said there is a cabal in India's Supreme Court acting at the interest of foreign powers. Do you really?
100%.
Yeah.
Look, you know, since I went to Delhi, I moved to Delhi in 2016 first to practice the Supreme Court. My seat in the Rajya Sabha came in 2021. But I'd only moved with the idea of practicing the Supreme Court. I mean, I was approached by well-known lawyers, right? That, you know, you should be on one particular side.
We know all know which that side is. Yes. Yeah. Foreign powers are, even the media, foreign media tries to sort of run down. Why do you think that they are interested in this flourishing India? Isn't it supposed to be from third world country to some place that we are reaching? What is it actually, do you think, they're bothering them? The West especially. You know, there's so-called topmost papers, newspapers, news channels, or lobbies.
I think that we are a challenge. Mm-hmm. A growing and strong India is a challenge to the supremacy of the West.
Mm. Right?
Our policies, we want to be friends with everyone.
Mm.
You know, even with China, who's sniping at our borders, we wanted to be their friends. You saw the great outreach that Prime Minister Modi had in the beginning. When you have boundary skirmishes, you know, things are bound to flare up. You can't have your soldiers being killed every day. I mean, the nonsense of the past that, you know, we will overlook these kinds of things, or especially since in 93 and 1996, you have boundary resolution agreements in those 2 years, right? That we once and for all want to become friends with China, right? Engage in trade with them, but we must first resolve. And that's the policy of this government.
Mm.
You please sit down and once and for all tell us what is your perception of the boundary and what is our perception, and so try and sort out that, resolve that difference. Until then, we can't keep on having, you know, engaging in friendship. They never ever took that offer up.
Mm.
So everything is a national self-interest, you know. The Russians, for instance, right, have been friends from times immemorial.
Yeah.
Right? They may have a dispute with Ukraine, but we've been very balanced, right? Mm. We've said that this is not an era of, Prime Minister Modi has made it very clear, this is not an era of war.
Mm.
Right? We would like peace.
Mm.
But then sit down across a table and find out what is the different adversarial position between the two protagonists. We've offered to mediate as well.
Mm.
So ours has been a policy of Vishwaguru, Anupam. And India has never been an aggressor towards anybody.
We have never ever attacked anybody.
And that's our biggest, pride. Look at, we are the peaceniks of the world.
Mm.
We want peace with everybody, and we want peace with that others have amongst themselves.
Right.
So that is our policy. We have no permanent enemies. We have no gut enemies. We have enemies that we want to live in peace and our boundaries to be secure. It's a variation of what is called the Thucydides gap. That ancient Athens and Sparta, right? The problem used to always arise because power that was in, you know, the foremost power, if it was Athens, right, was always upset that Sparta is going to come and overtake them.
Mm. Okay.
So that fear that we lose our primary position in the world, in those days, the Greeks were ruling the world.
Mm.
So it's called the Thucydides gap.
Right.
That it's the fear of a sitting most powerful power, of a rising emergent power that is going to overthrow you and become more powerful than you. Look at our welfare schemes.
Yeah.
Look at what we've done in digital India. How we brought 1.3 billion people, most of them out of poverty, some very soon out of poverty when we become a 5 trillion economy, right? Look at what we've done, the digital economy. How many people are now paying tax? We have, at this stage, highest growth in the world. We have limited, very reasonable, below Reserve Bank tolerable limits of both unemployment and inflation.
Mm.
We have capital markets where if you're invested in the capital markets, every day you get up and you see that your wealth is rising.
Right.
So the middle class, the relatively upper middle class, everybody, there's something for everybody.
Mm.
How many people have been bought out by the scheme that the government brought into the mainstream? How much leakage of money was there in the old welfare schemes? And how advantageous has been this direct cash transfer? Money is going directly to the targets it's intended for. And no middlemen are actually eating up money. These are all lessons for the world. And peace. Look at our defense capacity now.
Mm.
Chandrayaan.
Mm.
Now the sun.
Exactly.
So look at this. Look at the scale of our achievements. Simple thing, Anupam. You know, in Parliament, right? The first question that was asked: why did you do it? Why did you not start this Swachh
Bharat Abhiyan,
the Shauchalaya business? Why didn't you start it in 2014 when you first came?
Right?
And why did you start women's reservation only when in your last year of your second term? Answer is: what did you people do for all these years?
Mm.
First, we had to give women dignity.
Mm.
Did you ever think of the shame that women suffered from open defecation. We had to give you what you didn't do for 60 odd years of your rule. And having given them dignity, we gave them empowerment. And the final step has been reservation.
One question which keeps bothering me as a Kashmiri, which I think maybe you will be able to answer. So when there is a terrorist who is to be hanged, the Supreme Court opens the door in the middle of the night and sort of says that we will take the case of pardoning or whatever it is. And on the other side, when Kashmiri pundits go, the kind of atrocities that has happened, and they said it's in the past. So there is no record of it. So we'll not be accepting this petition. It baffles me.
Yes, I mean, there is that, dichotomy in approach. When a terrorist, we have to show the international community that we give due process even to terrorists. And in a sense, Anupam, it's good that some lawyers are even taking up these cases, right? Mm. Because those cases are doomed to failure. They are, the evidence is overwhelming. I suppose that one of the reasons is that the Supreme Court has to also keep up the optics for international, goodwill and to show that our system is fair. We give it to the worst kind of, even enemies against the state, terrorists, are given that access to our courts. That's the rule of law.
Mm.
The Kashmiri pundits, I personally think that discarding it just because it's a little ancient.
Mm. 32 mean, years old.
Crime never dies.
Yeah.
Crime never dies. That's a basic principle of criminal law. It never dies. So the door should always be open. Unless somebody comes with a case which has no evidence.
Mm.
Then they will say, how can we examine it? You've not brought evidence of atrocity. Kashmiri pundits will be rehabilitated.
Mm. You think so?
Body hai to mumkin hai.
Your daughter is now following your footsteps.
Yes.
What is your brief to her? Or she's already successful?
No, no, she's just started one. It's a long way from success. This is
asking this stuff to a father, not to a very well-known lawyer and a great speaker.
Genetics is not an answer to everything. Hard work. As I told you right in the beginning,
right.
This is 99% industry and perspiration.
Right.
If she works hard, she has a flair for it, right? But you have to translate that flair into output with really hard work.
What is her strength?
She's very good at researching the law.
Hmm.
So hopefully she will, and she stayed away from my field, which is basically criminal and now to some extent constitutional law.
Mm.
So she's a civil lawyer, commercial lawyer.
Mm.
So she's in a different field.
Mm.
There is no shadow, et cetera, of grandfather and father.
Mm.
She will thrive on her own merits.
In 2047, we will be 100 years old. You will be 100% around and I'm also there, hopefully. Where do you see India?
Economic power, military power.
Mm.
And I also see India as being a highly developed nation.
Mm.
Highly developed nation, which combines development, inclusive development with welfare, with the best of welfare, and which combines powerful military capabilities with an eternal peaceful intent, the Vishwa Guru of the world that Modi talks about today.
Thank you, my friend. Mr. Jethmalani, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
How
wonderful. And thank you for watching. Join me next week for another intimate yet inspiring debate. And let's talk Bharat with Anupam Kher. Namaskar.